Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, I'm Claire from Wild Ginger Running, the trail and ultra running YouTube channel, and this is the podcast version of my weekly live chat with an athlete, coach, or other running expert. The link to the original film on YouTube is in the show notes. Check out my Instagram and YouTube channel for more training advice, inspiration, and gear reviews. Everything is Wild Ginger Running, and my blog is wildgingerrunning.co.uk. Support me on Patreon if you enjoy this free advice at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Enjoy this podcast and see you next week for more.
Good evening and welcome to Wild Ginger Running.
Welcome.
With a Scotty takeover. So we we have a confession to make at the start of this podcast. Due to family commitments, our guest is currently tied up, and not kind of physically tied up, but just tied up with looking after his son. So he's running a little bit late, but we thought we'd start. And if you're kind of sat there waiting, wondering when we're going to be starting, we thought we'd start now and hopefully bring our guest Marcus in.
Another Marcus,
not me. They're able to kind of join us as and when. So we're gonna maybe just start with our usual kind of friendly rant. If this completely sounds like it's ad hoc, when yes it is. Completely ad hoc, isn't it?
Yeah, let's just fill for when John Marcus comes. So how are you?
I'm very good, Jen. How are you? Are you well? Are you keeping well? If you're joining us live, we will have Marcus Brown on very shortly, who's also known as The Marathon Marcus on Instagram, and he also has his own podcast and has an amazing kind of story of going from a four-hour marathon runner, or even kind of slow in that, four hours 45 down to sub three. And we've just had a notification on Skype that Marcus
is alive.
Is there? He's saying hi. So we might kind of dialing. So you're probably going to hear a little bit of a kind of delay going on. Here we go. We've got a call coming in. So we're going to introduce Marcus straight away. This is not how we normally do things.
We are completely throwing him in at the deep end.
There we go.
Hi, Marcus.
Hey, Marcus.
How are you doing, right?
Yeah, we're live already.
So, we just went in and then I just said we're going to throw you in at the deep end and bring you in live. So, yeah.
Yeah, apologies for running late, but I think as all parents will kind of attest to, like, sometimes it's not as straightforward as putting your kids to bed and being a one.
Yeah. No, I mean, you don't. Please don't apologize. We appreciate you being able to come and join us.
You were single-handedly dealing with kids and bedtime and trying to come on and speak to us.
So let's bring you on to those who are joining us live on YouTube. Excellent. So Marcus Brown, how old is your kids? Are you
three and a half and 17 months.
Wow.
Oh, fantastic! Excellent. And
so yeah. Not at the age where you can just say go to bed now, like the teenage.
The oldest one is it getting better at going to bed? You can say like go to bed. There's a no, then you put her down, and then she's asleep. The other one takes a little bit of maybe it'll work, but I mean, other parents have gone through the same type of thing, really. But they're asleep now. My wife is back. I think I've got back up, so all good to go.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. I'm kind of delving into all the things, it's plates that you're spinning. I do feel like you are so busy. I don't know where you find time. Like, so you run your podcast, A Runner's Life. And you're like up to nearly 100 episodes, or have you recorded your 100th episode?
I have done, but it's just not published yet. And I'm not quite sure which one's going to be the 100th yet. So I've got some really amazing people. I've had spoken to some amazing people, so I'm not quite sure what the 100th one will be, whether it'll be a new episode or maybe just a kind of like a mix of all the ones I've done before, because sometimes I feel like it's like an opportunity for me to speak to people and learn from them. So I might just try and do like a mashup of some of the lessons I've learned.
And I haven't really given you a proper intro, but we first met Marcus in a desert in Peru.
You met Marcus. I've not met Marcus.
No, you haven't met him. Where you were kind of spending the whole race grinning and having an amazing time, it looked like, and I was just moaning about heat and sand and... not having such a good time.
You were on a mission. So, I mean, I was there with like a couple of good friends, and yeah, the thing for me was just it was my first one, so I had no expectations. I just wanted to go out and enjoy it, well, as much as you can enjoy going across the desert in a sandstorm, carrying your kit in your back.
So, I mean, it was a stunning race.
We've got a picture. We have found a picture on your...
I haven't even warned you that we stole some photos off your Instagram. So we've got a picture of you, and I know where that picture is. That's at the bottom of... What did we call it? The Great Dune. I'm not sure if anybody else called it that, but it was huge. And it was just like... It's so soft, the sand, that every step forward you just slid back down. Like, it was just impossible to get up. But you're grinning, obviously, at the bottom of that. So that was probably the first day I think we went up there.
But that's always happens though when you see the photographer. I mean, all the pain goes away and you spot them and you start smiling.
No, I saw you smiling on every occasion.
That sand was really tough though, you're saying, like it, the soft bit, then you sort of learn towards the end that you sort of walk in like other people's footsteps.
I learned that on the dune as well. That was definitely a good tip.
At the top you're just like, why do you not tell me that at the bottom?
But then the next day we came down there, didn't we?
I feel like we're almost having a personal conversation here, like we're kind of intruding on some old catch up. We've not properly introduced Marcus.
Yes, no, that was me starting to introduce him and then just waffling on about Peru.
We can talk about Peru at some point. And if people are joining us live on YouTube, you can fire questions across to Marcus and we'll be asking Marcus questions. Trying to think of an appropriate kind of title. So you're known as the Marathon Marcus on Instagram. Yeah. And you have quite a large presence on Instagram. You've got quite a few followers there. You're quite active on there, really kind of great at encouraging people. You do a podcast, you're a marathon runner, kind of bit of trail running, maybe venturing into kind of MDS kind of stuff. And you're kind of really well known for that marathon, plus you're a dad, and you work full time as well.
Yeah. there's a lot going on. Yeah.
A lot, and you're based down in London as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but in fairness though, like I find that a lot of the people I meet, you know, on these amazing races, have got a lot going on in their lives as well.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make myself seem like I'm any more special than anyone else.
But you seem to have a way of kind of sharing your story, don't you? And being honest about it as well, because your first marathon time kind of, it was, you know, wasn't anything special, but you seem to have caught the marathon bug. So how did the marathons come into your life?
So I started running for a bet to do a 10K. Then I did a couple of 10Ks, half marathons to kind of build up my confidence. And then I went into my first marathon, which was Abingdon. I think I ran about 4:15. I should know this, but I can't remember that time. and then I ran a couple more, but I just did a lot of rookie mistakes. I didn't really know what I was doing. I'm not trying to say that I know 100% now what I'm doing. I think I just know a lot more than I did then.
Yeah.
I think because you're always learning from each race. So, yeah, I kind of got into the bike, well, sort of bit me, and yeah, I've been trying to, well, I'm not saying improve, but just kind of get more comfortable with it every time, because it's like this thing that you can't contain type thing. You can't always control it. So, and it's a lot of fun sometimes to sort of dive into that and just sort of see how you kind of react to it. Also, at the beginning, it wasn't that fun. But now it's getting a little bit more kind of accepted for what it is. It's getting a bit more interesting.
What year was that you first did Abingdon then?
2008, I think it was, yeah. Yeah,
and
so
how
quite a
long
while ago.
Was that from when you actually started running? You said that you started with some 10Ks. I mean, was that quite soon before then?
So my first race, the 10K, was in 2006.
All
right. So, yeah, it was a couple of years before I kind of built up my confidence. Because it's quite a scary thing. Even at that time, you know, when you're running at 10K, that seemed to me like, it seems like a very long distance to run,
yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, when you're running like from like lamppost to lamppost, and you've not, you know, done anything at school like that, it's everything seems like like gargantuan, do you know what I mean? Then it just took me a while to kind of get my confidence up to kind of do the halves, and even that you're thinking, wow, I've got to do that times two, I'm not quite sure. So, yeah, it took a lot of, you know, I think a lot of steps to get to the full marathon itself.
You kind of alluded there about kind of doing sports at school. Were you sporty at school?
More like football, a little bit of rugby, not so much running so much. And then I went to university and then, yeah, just kind of... the sports has stopped.
Yeah, I recognise that story.
That's cool.
Then, like, I've still got it. You sort of try to run and you just like die after like running a couple of metres. It's like,
and were you trying to run like Mo Farah, like completely flat out as well? Like, how hard can I do this run?
Well, in my mind, it probably looked like it was going flat out. But if you're watching it, it just looked probably like a slow motion. What's going on there? But even when you're running a marathon at the end, you sort of think you're going full out and you're just like, no, it's still coming.
So, I mean, so a lot of people, when they start 10K running, that they either kind of stick at 10Ks for quite a while or, you know, do 5Ks. So how come did you go from 10Ks to marathons in 2 years? Was it just the challenge of the event?
Yeah, it's more the challenge rather than the time, because I didn't have a running watch for quite a long period of time. I don't even, in my first London Marathon in 2010, I didn't have a running watch or a train with a running watch. I was just basically using my phone to, I think, work out the mileage and whatever it was. So I wasn't really doing it for trying to get fast. It was just more the accomplishment of just doing the marathon and what that represented. I think that was at a time when, I don't want to sound old, I'm not that old, but I think when marathons seem to be quite impressive when you told people at work, now no one really cares. I'm like, well, I do a marathon before I came to work.
And what was it about doing the marathon, or how had you been inspired to do that? Was the people that you knew that had run marathons, or was it something else?
Probably most likely the London Marathon, watching it on the BBC. I think it was probably the big inspiration, because I think before you looked at marathons and thought, oh, those people don't look like me. Just obviously from colour point of the way, I know people say, yeah, but you've got, like, you know, the Ethiopians and Kenyans, but I'm not, that's not where I'm from. I don't relate to those guys as runners. So
yeah.
I sort of someone from London that I could sort of relate to. So yeah, it just sort of took a while to kind of get into it. And then I saw, like I said, the London Marathon, and I was really inspired by the people I saw, just like everyday people running for causes close to their heart. And you thought, well, if they can do it, then why am I limiting myself to not doing it? Then you go for it, and you're like, wow, this is something else.
But it's quite a kind of bold step to take, though, isn't it, as well? Like that kind of, you know, to challenge yourself, to step up.
Scary.
Yeah. So your first one for 50, did you have a plan? Did you follow a schedule, or did you just kind of go, just run as and when?
I think I tried to follow stuff online, and because I'm quite an independent type person, so it's more like I'm going to do it my own way. And also there was a kind of naivety as well, running, thinking, oh, coaches are for other people, not for me, type of thing. So I never thought I was, you know, that was for me. So I was just trying to do it myself. So I kind of, you know, fumbled my way through it and, you know, did all the rookie mistakes, got injured, didn't really, but then you don't know what you don't know. And I think when I started working with my coach obviously later on, then it kind of helped just get to where I needed to do quicker than obviously doing it by myself.
So what were the sort of mistakes that you made? Was it just training too fast, too much?
So all those things, yeah. So I tried to run every, like, run faster than the day before, not really respecting fueling. I know some of the old school runners would be like, well, I took some water and I ran a marathon. Or whatever, but, like,
you know, a glass of red wine, even.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I just tried to run everything too quickly, didn't really respect the fueling, didn't really understand the differences of training, you know, the different types of zones that you run in. And, yeah, I think I was more brute force than anything else. So it got me so far, but then, you know, the marathon exposes you, not in a horrible way, but it just shows you where your weak points are. And at the time, I wasn't quite mature enough to kind of see what it was teaching me. I just thought, you know, if you do this, then you'll conquer it. But even now, you'll never conquer the marathon. Like, as fit as you can be and you can do all the work, you could never go into it like 100% be like, I've so got this. You might be like 90-something% because you know your training's gone well, but there's always that 10% you're like, okay, I'm going to respect what's going to come up. So, but I mean, I don't regret it. I mean, I went into it, I wanted to do the challenge, and, you know, for me, that's what it was about, really.
So how did you feel after you finished?
The first one was just amazing. You just have that amazing runner's high, and you're just like, wow, I did that. It's like the thing that scares you, that you've done it, you know. Unfortunately, I don't have many photos from that first marathon, but I think there's one photo I did have. I was in my football kit.
I was going to say, we've had some great ones. I think we had Lizzie Hawker and her describing her first race, and there wasn't a piece of running kit there. So, yeah, that sounds great.
No, there was nothing running about. It literally looked like I was a sub from a five-a-side.
Shin pads.
Jumped on, yeah.
Just in case.
Shin pads and shoes, but I didn't have the right running shoes. And, yeah, it was just, obviously, the right running shoes, I mean, that's obviously depending on what person you speak to, really. So that's another topic.
But yeah.
I looked like a football player.
Brilliant. But was there any point during that first marathon, you can remember, you were just like, did you ever kind of go, what am I doing this for? Or were you just kind of just, you sound to me as very kind of explorative and inquisitive about how you're feeling, your emotions. So were you just kind of enjoying that opportunity to explore yourself?
I mean, that's an interesting question you ask, it because, like, it's like trying to go back into the past to remember where you were and not cloud it with your thoughts of where you are today.
Yeah.
And if I try to go back, I mean, I can only give a really limited answer, but I was so fearful. I remember being so nervous because you just don't know what you're going into. The build-up, you've got those nerves and you start it. You don't really know what you're doing. You're just kind of going by feel.
Yeah.
And everything is new. You're running further than you've ever done in training, so everything is new, and it's just the new emotions of the physical discomfort, all the emotions of just the mental challenges of the chatter going, what are you doing, this hurts, stop. Like, just like, you think, oh my gosh, 18, like, you're 18 miles, whereas before you'd be like oh, 21 miles left. Whereas I think I just looked at it in a different way, I won't say a negative way, but just trying to complete it, and just it just been overwhelming. You're trying to, like, eat this massive meal and, like, you know, you're not breaking up. Whereas now I kind of look at it slightly different. I try to break it into smaller chunks. Whereas then it was just very overwhelming and just everything's, you know, experiencing it for the first time.
But then you did it again. Like, how soon did you sign up for your next one?
I think it was probably the following year. And that one was, I think I ran like slower, but I never really kind of improved because I was just really going by sort of brute force and not really respecting the process. And, like, sometimes people say to me now, like, oh, what are you training for? And I don't want to come across like I'm being arrogant, but you're always training, you're always in some sort of state of some sort of cycle. Whereas before, I was just like, oh, I'll just run for 3 months, 4 months, then I'll stop and I'll get back into it. And that's what I was doing. I was making a lot of those, I say, mistakes, but I just didn't know any better. I thought you could just jump into it 16 weeks. and just kept repeating the cycle of pain so often. And just, and you think, so at some point you've got to learn, but it's like, no, just keep trying to like force it through. Like, you kind of think like, I'm gonna dominate this thing, but it's not something you dominate. It's something that really humbles you, and that I think it took me, you know, a long time for me to kind of really respect the distance and to take it a bit more seriously.
And were you doing all that on your own, or did you have kind of a running club or friends that were runners at the same time?
Yeah, so for me, when I grew up, I mean, running wasn't really that encouraged. It wasn't something that my friends did or my parents were into. So I know people would say like, oh, it's a running club and things like that, but it wasn't something that's part of my my background and something I didn't really feel comfortable doing, because this wasn't something I grew up doing. So even now, it's kind of, I still kind of don't really, you know, run within a running club. I've got people I run with and do tempo runs, and, you know, I've got a coach and things like that, but it's, at the time, I just didn't have that help and that access, really.
So how soon was it then, you said you got a coach, so how soon was it that you decided then that a coach was the solution, maybe to kind of stop doing the self-harming and maybe kind of be, yeah, definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again, isn't it, the same result? So yeah, kind of breaking out of that cycle. What point did you go, a coach is what I need? Okay.
So probably my first London marathon, I'll probably give a bit of a build up. So my first London marathon, I ran it in 4:55, and I made like all the mistakes that you could do. I mean, I was, you know, it's like when you first run London marathon, like so busy, congested, and I was just dodging and weaving, sprinting past, and just, and I just blew up spectacularly, and I just paid for it for the rest of the marathon. And then towards the end of the year, I got a place to run Berlin. And this is the time when you could just enter Berlin. First come, first serve. Not like how the mains are like now. It's just absolutely crazy to get in. Yeah. And I got a place there, and I was trying to break sub four. And I ran, I think, 4:04. And I remember the sub four pacers passed me, and that just broke me. And I was just like, and I was just like, I just couldn't shake it. I was just like, it just broke me. And I just got to the end, 4:04. It's still a big jump from 4:55 down to 4:04.
Yeah.
And at the time, I hated running. And reflecting now, it's not that I hated running. It's just that running revealed something about myself that I needed to work on. And I just didn't really realize it at the time, because I was just trying to chase these goals and trying to chase the next thing, the next thing. And after running Berlin, I actually stopped running for several years, because I needed to kind of do some work myself and just work out why I was kind of, I mean, running was another aspect of me just trying to overachieve, trying to keep doing things to do more. I mean, we all kind of, I can't speak for other people, but the way I sort of grew up was to kind of like, you've always got to be on it, you've always got to be grinding, you've always got to be working. It's the things that you can control, and running and the marathon, the first thing it actually showed me, actually, no, you really need to step back and respect it. Obviously there's other things in life, but I think running specific a marathon, like it's such a big thing. So no matter what stadium and what I feel right now, like, I always respect it. So kind of to come back to your question, where I got a coach, so I had that period of time, then I came back into running London Marathon again. I saw that and thought, oh my gosh, like, you've got that nostalgia again after a couple of years, got back into it. And then I found my coach probably about 2015, 2016, I think it was. I think it's 2016, because it was before I ran Chicago. And then we've been working together for at least 4 years, I think now, 3-4 years. So it's been a really good relationship, and it's helped me a lot.
Brilliant. So when you was in that kind of period of no running, did you miss running, or did you have so much you were trying to work out yourself at? You didn't, because you talk to a lot of runners, like when they get injured or when they have to take time out, and it's almost kind of like they've lost a limb. And a lot of runners fear having to have time off. Did you miss it?
I don't think I really developed a relationship with running properly then. I was just running to achieve the marathon or achieve the medal.
Mm.
I wasn't running because I enjoyed it or I loved it. I mean, you're not going to love running every day. And there's going to be some days you like a lot less, but I was running for the wrong reason. I wasn't running for the reason that I am now. And I don't want to come across as arrogant, because you're always still learning, you're always still developing. I mean, like, where I am now is not going to be where I am later, and you know what I mean? So I think I just needed to spend some time just to kind of
go back to why I enjoy running, and seeing the London Marathon again was really pivotal, because you just sort of saw people doing it for something bigger themselves, for the joy, the enjoyment. I thought, oh, I really want to try to connect with that thing, as opposed to kind of just running the marathon to complete it. For me, it was never about the times, it was just about completing it and getting another medal, and getting another medal and just having this sort of horde of marathons. So I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
Really interesting, because you speak to some runners when they're injured or having to have time off and stuff like that, and they seem almost kind of mournful, or they kind of seem really aggrieved that they can't run. So it's just interesting, yeah. You know, to meet a runner who's taken that time out and not been like, yeah, no, I've really missed it. But it's like you say, your motivation for doing the running or doing the marathons was in some respects not always that kind of healthy. So you started working with a coach.
Yeah.
Was it kind of like a complete revelation, a kind of like, well, this is, you know, was it a very different way to how you'd been running previously?
Yeah, so it was structure, and it was a little bit of mindset things as well. And yeah, I mean, what you spoke about before with like runners getting disappointed about injuries and not running, I've gone through those periods as well, but I feel like even with recent injuries, I've learned to kind of manage that a lot better, be a bit more, I guess, balanced about this, where you are in relation to things, and, you know, just trying to do the best of what you can and where you are. It's not always easy, but, you know, at the time you kind of think it's your everything. But I guess to kind of answer your question about my coach, we kind of really went back to basics in terms of learning about why you run certain paces and how long you run them for and what the purpose is. I was always asked questions like, why are we doing this run? Why are we not doing this? Why am I not doing more miles? Because the thing is, you look at other people and think, oh, why they're doing 60 miles a week, why am I not 60 miles a week? I could do 60 miles a week. You secretly don't want to do 60 miles a week. You don't want to do 60 miles a week. And so, so it was really good to kind of get that understanding, deep understanding, because although you can do it yourself, you know, if you're working with someone, you just get that information a lot quicker. Then if the relation doesn't work, then you haven't really lost anything, because at least you know one way that doesn't work for you. But, you know, working with my coach has been really good. And even just the mental stuff as well, in terms of just how you see workouts and injuries and just being able to put things into context. It's like sometimes at the way at the beginning, you'd be like, oh, I've had a bad run, so that must be this or must be that. But now it's just like you see it in a bigger context. It's like, okay, how did that session go? What factors were involved? How did the week go? How did the month go? What good things did you learn from that? Like today, I did a run today. If I had done the same one probably 2 years ago, I would have had a completely different impact. You know, just different thought process about it. But I was able to kind of think, okay, these are things I do really well, and now we've passed and we've moved on. So whereas before, it'd be like something you'd be like, oh. But it doesn't mean like I don't care about the workout. It's just like you can't hold on to these things, because the same thing is like if something goes really well and you hold on to that, you know, they're kind of like both impossible, really, like the good and bad. You just really have to now, you just have to do the best with where you are right now.
Yeah, definitely. So if there's some weird sighing or snoring, we have Sherlock
the beagle
in between us, who you're grateful that is, you can only hear him because he rolled in fox poo earlier this morning and he still stinks even though he's been in the bath. But if there's some sighing and snoring going on, it's not me and Jen zoning out. It's just the beagle between us who's kind of getting himself comfy a minute ago. So, yeah, sorry, I lost my trail of thought there.
So getting back to your kind of marathon journey, we've got that you kind of had these horrific ones or not so great ones. You took some time out, but then you came back and started working with a coach. So yes. How did those times come down to what we know that you can do now? And what period of time was that?
Gosh, that's a good question. So there was quite a period of time. So I think from about 2017 onwards, it's things started to improve, I'd say. So I was getting down to like the low, 3:30s, and then working my way down to kind of sub 3. It took me a while to get to sub 3. So I broke sub 3 last year. But I mean, it's only now we look back, you join the dots, that you actually realize how all those experiences and all those races helped the runner that helped me break sub three. So, for example, when I ran like Boston Marathon 2018, the weather was horrendous.
Oh, I think we found a photo of you running in some horrendous rain and assumed it was Boston.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're putting that up on the screen now. You won't be able to see that. But yeah, we can see you there.
Yeah, so that really helped with running Dorney Lake last year because it was really windy and raining. And even like running London, and you know, the first time I ran London, I, like I said, I felt just like, I felt weak because like you get these thoughts that go, stop, you can't do this. And then at that time, I was just like, okay, you must be right. But now, when the thoughts come in, and especially in the races, not all the time, but you can just, you entertain a little bit more. You're just like, okay, cool. So you think this is what the case is. And then you just have a little bit of back and forth. Sometimes you can just shut it down. Sometimes you just have to like stay there. It's like a guest coming to your house and you're just like, okay, give him some drink. I'm gonna leave soon. Then they leave and you're like, okay, cool, good to go. So all those marathons and all those races, like now I can look back and be like, even the ones that really sucked, I'm like, actually, I've learned so much from them. And it's funny when people go, oh yeah, but you look so strong and you do all this sort of stuff now. That wasn't something I didn't read a book and be like, oh, now I'm mentally strong. Do you know what I mean? It's just like all the experiences and all the training as well. I think that helps make you just a lot stronger. I mean, for me, but some people get it quicker. But for me, it just took that period of time to get where I am now. And I'm still learning and it's still going and it's still an ongoing thing. So.
And you're talking about how your motivations had changed, but obviously, like, we're like, woo, you got your sub three marathon and things, but that must have been a goal for you. Or are you saying that that wasn't the main goal and you had other reasons for doing the race?
So it's a good question. So I think time goals are really good, but at the same time, they can't be your main why, because it's going to sound really wishy-washy. I just want to give some context, because if your goal is just a specific time and you're training that time, potentially you could be limiting yourself to how fast you could go. So you have to have the goal in mind, but not be like, that is my everything type thing. So I had that in mind, but then you're still thinking alongside that, every day I'm just going to go out and run my best and see what my best looks like and see what happens. And then it's kind of two paths sort of concurrently going along the line, and then once you get closer to the marathon, you know, if you're trying to work to be a better, then you're trying to work towards this goal time, and then you kind of see where you are. Sometimes, like, just letting things happen as they go, as following the program, you might be further along. So it's kind of a balance between being like, this is my time goal, but then obviously, let's just see how good I can be. Sometimes you might be further ahead than you think you are, and you just have to kind of check back and just run where that is. But I think you have to have, like, different ways, you know, for different days. I mean, every day you're not going to get out of bed thinking, I can't wait, like, you know, sub 6:50 pace. I mean, like, I can't wait to do that today. Or, you know, I mean, sometimes it's cold, it's tired. That's just not enough motivation, you know.
Yeah.
We've all been there. You get up in the morning, go training. I think for me, some of the hardest ones are the runs after the workouts, because, like, your legs are just, like, dead. And in the middle of winter, it's cold. It's like, oh, man. Those are the tough ones. So you have to have a different why for different days. And, I think that's okay that they can change as well. I don't think they stay static. I think because, you know, you change as a person.
Yeah.
So, but also you've got to enjoy it though.
Oh yeah, massively. Yeah, that's a key motivator, isn't it? Especially as you say, in the winter, still trying to find the enjoyment and the fun in it. But so you ran 4:15, but was there a certain point then when your coach said to you, look, Marcus, I think 3:30 is definitely on the cards. And then was it kind of the way the training was developing in something like maybe what certain tempo runs you was doing? You could see your pace coming down and certain efforts that you actually were then starting to think. Because a lot of people will tend to either just pull a number out for the marathon or will then just kind of go, well, this is where I'm probably at as a runner. And that's, you know, 3:30 is my kind of stable point. That's where I'm going to go. But to kind of like take an hour and a quarter off and, well, even more than that and go sub three, that's really kind of exciting in that kind of time period. But there must have been a point where your coach must have said to you, I think you can definitely do 3:30, or I think you can definitely, or was that something you were discovering for yourself?
It's a really good question, actually, about just other people's influences and how it can either push you forward and limit you. So before talking about my coach, I had a coach before, I think, a very short period of time, and he got me to do this training fitness thing, and he worked out, he's putting stuff in a spreadsheet, went, did a little bit, printed it out, went, okay, based on your times, you should probably run like your maximum would be like 3:50 marathon or 1:40 half, and these sort of times. Like, okay, cool, that's my limit. And then I would start working with my coach, and he remember he'd see me run, and he'd like, I think you could run like way under 3 hours. I was like, what? Like, what are you drinking? Are you smoking? So I was thinking about my old coach and thinking 3:15 was my limit.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's really cool that, you know, you meet someone that sees something in you that you don't see in yourself.
Mm.
And he's kind of like helped sort of take that limiter off. I'm not saying I've gone completely crazy. I'm like, I'm going to be doing, you know, I don't limit. I don't mean saying something completely ridiculous, but sometimes we can limit ourselves and we just need to dream bigger. And it's like something like Patty Dillon, I spoke to in my podcast, first woman to break sub 2:30 in a marathon. And one of the things that she says, encourages people is like, just dream bigger. Because even when she was competing, she's like, there's things that I did that limited myself. I just think that's when I go back to like what I talked to you before about having the time goal, but also being in the moment to be like, how good could I be?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's about pushing that needle further forward as well. I think, you know, rather than kind of being limited by the time, because when you think about the times, they're kind of arbitrary type things that, you know, we think about, like, why is sub-3 important? If you think about it, like, why is that important? If you go back to the marathon distance, like, why is it 26.2? Because obviously, you know, the London Olympics, because, you know, the Royal Family wanted to see us run that 205 yards when the course was like 26 miles or 25 miles. And
yeah.
All these sort of things that we do without really asking why we're doing it. So sometimes it's about being able to sort of take that away and just be like, how good can I be? And I think that's basically what my coach has got me to be, think about. It's like, well, actually, no, you're really limiting yourself there. Not in a negative way, but
you
could be so much further than your thinking is allowing you to be.
But that must have been quite motivational as well, though, to have a coach to say that, you know, not like we're kind of saying it, but it's good to, you know, we always want our egos inflated. But that must have kind of put a bit of a spring in your step for a couple of weeks, or even when you start hitting the hard sessions. Were you using that as a motivator, or were you just kind of like, that kind of helped you in that relationship if he has this kind of idea of what I could potentially be doing?
Motivation one is a tricky one, because obviously anyone can gas you up and tell you you can do this or you can do that, but ultimately training is down to you.
Yeah.
And the results speak for themselves. You can blame other stuff, but you've still got to do the work.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell me, like, well, because you could run a 2:10 marathon. Like, okay, great. But I've still got to get off my chair and, you know, put that motivation to the side and actually got to do the work.
Yeah.
When it really is uncomfortable and I don't want to do it. So it's great that, for me, it's great that someone believes in you.
Yeah.
And then I think it definitely unlocks something in myself, because you have to have that drive and that will to want to do it. And, you know, it's kind of helped re-unlock something that was in me. Because before, like I said, it was in the marathon, but I was kind of really harsh to myself. I was like, I'm weak for having these thoughts. Like, you should not have them. But actually, the weakness is not having the thoughts. It's just like thinking that's the truth. You're just like, actually, this is a complete lie. Like even stupid things like I do. Like, say if I'm running and it's really windy, I just have these games with myself. I think, oh, it's like, I'm like a sieve. And, like, pick up your legs. And it sounds ridiculous, but like you do realize actually you stop thinking about the resistance and you just start trusting yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's all the kind of the mental sort of things that work. It's not like a mental tips, tricks type thing. It's just being like, actually, I'm good enough. I belong here, and I have what I need for right now. I might have to slow down a bit, but I've got what I need for right now. I think that's what my coach helped me kind of unlock within myself, and like, someone can unlock it, but you have to walk through that door and do the work.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's so true. It sounds like if you come across the chimp paradox, the Steve Pete, so that kind of, I love your analogy of talking about a guest coming in the house and you just having to to kind of give them a cup of tea to kind of pass the button, and then the guest leave. Because it's so true. And so, like, when you did Peru, was that a different mindset then, or... Because like Jen was saying, you were kind of grinning away, enjoying being kind of running around the sand dunes of Peru and on the beach. Was that mindset the same there, or was it more just, this is a great opportunity, look at where I'm being able to run at the moment?
You make it sound like it was like Baywatch.
It was.
like, what happened? You and John would shoot off, and then I'd catch you up a bit later, and then just you'd be having like the best time ever, and I'd be like, I just want this to end.
Oh my gosh. I think for all of us, like John and Jill as well, like we kind of committed that we were going to finish it together, start and finish it together. So you were strength for numbers, and then you have the periods of time where you know that someone's going to be stronger and someone's going to be weaker, and you all kind of like help each other. And John was really good at it as well, just kind of completely rookie doing that, you know, just being there to be like, okay, remember to have your drinks, remember to have your salt tablets, these kind of little things. And these little stage things that you do help kind of break down the big distances. But at the same time, one was in Peru, and you probably know this as well, like when you're, you know, because I'm running in London, you know, you're running this concrete jungle type thing, and it's just like everything feels on top of you. But when you're in Peru, it's like, wow, like this is incredible. Like I am part of something so much bigger. And like, you just can't help but be in awe of just where you are. And it's just like absolutely incredible. So even though there were moments where it's really difficult, and it's like tough, like with the sandstorm and stuff, just, when you stop and you think, this is incredible. And the funny enough, actually, when we finished it, it was actually quite sad going back to like regular life and having to like get your phones and do stuff, because it was such a simple way of life. Like, you know, like the night before, you prepared your kit, you had your dinner, you knew what you were doing in the morning, you got up, you prepared your kit, you went, and it was just like a really nice way to live, a simple way of just stripping back all the unnecessary stuff and just going back to like why we run and just being a part of nature and something that you don't always get to do running and in life. So like for me, I really enjoyed, because I just completely took the time element away. But saying that, though, there was one incident where, it's going to make you laugh, actually, talking about time, I got a time penalty because someone chucked their bottle of water in my tent. And you know, like, if you've got extra bottles, then you get penalised. And I was just like, I was looking at our times going, how the hell am I 30 minutes down? So thankfully, it got sorted out. But that was the only time I got, like, my competitive bit came out.
And did he kick off?
The rest of that was away. Yeah. Because I think no one likes to be called a cheat. You know?
Yeah. The injustice of it all. The injustice. Do you ever fancy doing any more multi-stage racing? Do you fancy the full MDS or something like Cape Wrath or some of the Ultra X?
Yeah, definitely. I think I want to do the full MDS. I want to do some others. But the way that I look at it is I kind of want to give... Running is such a funny thing. Everyone thinks, oh, you just do a mile, you do a 5K, you do a 10K, a marathon. You just switch between distances. You can do it. But for me, I feel like I want to be able to look back and be like, the marathon distance, I gave it my best shot. And then once I feel like I've got to kind of near place where that is, then I kind of want to take that forward into the ultra. Because I feel like, obviously, the training, because to do an ultra or, you know, the trail races, you need to be strong, not just physically, but mentally. And you just need to have those years of training behind you. And I think sometimes people jump into it too soon because they're quite enthusiastic, which isn't a bad thing, but it's just like trying to respect the process and being like, you know, to be, you know, to have longevity, you kind of need to respect the process. So I kind of want to do my thing in the marathon, and then I want to move into the ultras. I kind of wanted to go into bit sooner, but it's just, this is life, you know. It's taken me a bit longer than I wanted to kind of get to where I'm the marathon. I still got some goals that I want to achieve in this distance, and I kind of want to stick with that first. But there's so many temptations, like, you know, to run other races. You're just like, oh, I so want to do it, but you know that how awkward that conversation could be with you and your coach. And you're like, but I want to do this. He's like, well,
I mean, it's a conversation we have with lots of our athletes, and we kind of almost feel a bit bad kind of cutting people's race calendars down for you, especially for ultra marathons, because you just can't, you know, how long it takes to recover from a marathon. Ultra marathons. So what's your, are you able to say what your goal is with a marathon? What's your ultimate? Is it 210? Are we talking 210 there? Or maybe
I think around 210 questions would be asked.
That connection with Dr. Ferrari, hey?
Yeah, exactly. Some doctors and I don't know. I think at the minute I wanna get a London Championship place. So for me, like, so London Marathon has been like such a big part of my marathon journey and just like a narrative. So to go from 4:35 to then owning a good for age place, one is amazing, and that's amazing for me. And the next stage is trying to I'm working to earn a championship place. It's dropped quite a bit of time, so since obviously with COVID and getting more competitive. So for me,
that's the dog. Sorry,
it's not us. It's just a beagle.
I'm so sorry. That's the dog.
Talking about running again in the house, and he gets like, oh, here we go.
That's hilarious. The championship place is my next aim. But then you know what it's like as a runner. You're like, oh, I'm only 2 minutes away from there. Maybe I can push it further. But at the minute, I'm not looking beyond the championship place, and it's taking some time and some effort to get to it, because you do some tempo work and you think, wow, that was good. It felt hard, and man, I've got to do that times two plus more. It's going to take some time, but I'm up for the journey.
And how did COVID and all the race cancellations affect your plans? Were you halfway through training for something when March and the lockdown struck last year?
So the original aim was to run the London Marathon last year. Obviously, for the right reasons, it was postponed. And then I was looking at other races, and then Dorney came up. And yeah, so that was kind of my main focus towards the end of last year, which was really good. But like everyone at the start, you're kind of a bit lost, because you're taking away some of your motivations to run, and then you're having to really kind of dig deep into kind of why you're running. I remember I had one session, and mentally I was just like, what am I doing this for? You ask yourself those questions, you stop. And I think sometimes when you're doing a session, I don't want to say suffer is the right word, but you have to be in the place to be like, I'm going to go into the world and stay there.
Yeah.
And I started running, I was just like, put my foot in the world, I was like, nah. And I stopped, and I was like, nah. And I was just like, okay, cool. And sometimes it's okay to stop and be like, just stop the session, go home, think about it, talk to your coach, talk to people around you, and just kind of get yourself thinking and in a better mind frame to kind of come back and attack it. And then after that session, I stopped, you don't lose too much. And then I went the next one and I was absolutely fine. So I think that's an important thing to, especially during like COVID thing. And also another thing about COVID as well, I recently did a half marathon. Obviously it's going to affect people in different ways, but I had my second jab, and some people had different effects, the first and second. The first jab was fine. Second jab I had, I was in a half marathon, and I think like 3 days beforehand, it literally just knocked me out. Like, it felt like I'd been run over by a truck, and like even easy runs felt really difficult. And you know what, like us runners are like, we're just like, we're gonna do it. Have you seen like the sketch The Black Knight in Monty Python?
Oh yeah. Arms off, like, yeah. Just for a scratch.
Yeah. You got no arms, you got no legs. I'm like, but I'm fine. Come back here. So that was me basically lining up for the half marathon, and I was just like, I'll be fine. And then the first mile was like, this is going to be a hard day, but you suffer through it. So I got through it and I did it. And then, a couple of days later, I felt back to normal. But I mean, I would just encourage anyone, I always don't always take my own advice, just like, listen to your body. My body was not to run. I was like, no, I will run. I will get through this.
Yeah, you're kind of saying about having experiences suffering for the marathon, that's definitely an opportunity and experience to say, this is what full suffering. It's like, if I can suffer that half marathon post jab, then the marathon's going to be an absolute breeze. So have you got a marathon lined up to
London this year, so
that's in October this year
and actually this Saturday I'm taking part in the Meet the Experts panel, so we'll be talking about like beginners and sort of advice for beginners. I'm going to be talking about my first marathon, just basically everything that I would advise you not to do.
It's fine. You make the mistakes so that everybody else doesn't have to.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. But, it's just learning, and also I want people to enjoy it.
That actually leads into, one of the questions that we've got from YouTube. So one of the live listeners, hi Keith, he says, hello Marcus, I'm an African-American trail runner here in SoCal, I'm assuming that's South California. How do I get involved in what you're doing? So what's that sort of advice for people listening in and wanting to suffer as much as you do in the marathons?
Hi Keith, so thanks for joining in. So I'm just going to be sort of asking whether you want to get into trail running or into the marathon running.
It kind of is, I think it's kind of that trail running.
Okay, so I'm one of the co-founders of a group called Black Trail Runners, and we set up as a a running club, but we've also started a charity. You can find us on Instagram and kind of follow what we're doing. Some of our team members recently ran the Roundy Rounds.
I saw that. Basically, amazing.
Yeah, they did a great job there. And yeah, just get involved with us on Instagram. We've got a Facebook group, and you know, we're just trying to encourage people to get involved. And I know one of the big sort of things that come up is like, it says black in the name, so people going, well, that's not inclusive, blah, blah, blah. White allies, whatever, like, you're all welcome to join. The whole point is that it's just creating a space for people who don't feel represented to be part of something. And the whole idea was for it to kind of not be a thing and, you know, actually disband and actually just be a running group. Because most running clubs are generally focused towards kind of the white kind of runners. If I think when we spoke to you about, did you, you said to me, did you want to join a running club? I was like, well, when I was younger, I didn't even think that was an option for me.
Yeah.
So we kind of want to change the narrative and hopefully get to a stage where everyone feels like it is a, you know, a space for them, and then they can kind of, we can sort of remove the title and just kind of move forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of one of the things that we get back, you know, back to us. But like I said, like, it's a group for everyone to feel welcome and just encourage people that aren't represented to feel like it's a space for them. It's not the sense of, like, you know, you can't get a train ticket to go to wherever and run. It's more the fact that sometimes if you don't see yourself doing something, it's quite hard to do something. So for example, when I did like the World Marathon Majors, like, it's not right for me to turn around to people, but like, oh, you just figure out how to do it. I did it, you do it. You know, sometimes people can't do that. Do you know what I mean? Need other people to feel safe to do that sort of thing. So I think I've gone on a big rant here, but the whole point is to get involved with us and all, obviously, black, white, whatever, just get involved, and everyone's welcome to kind of make everyone feel welcome in the trails.
That's great.
Brilliant. Yeah, because there is that, yeah. Kind of at times you look at entry fields and people doing, especially ultra marathons, there's not a huge amount of diversity in the sport, is there, unfortunately? And
yeah.
You know, the trails are there for everybody, aren't they? And an amazing place to go running. But if you've not had that opportunity, like you're saying, like your childhood, of being given that opportunity to explore stuff like that, then you guys are encouraging people and giving away, you know, means and ways of doing it. So cool. Yeah, so hopefully Keith, I think somebody else's Conscious Gears reached out to Keith as well, who's based out in Arizona, so I'm sure they might be able to hook up. And always leave a comment on the YouTube channel or get in touch with Marcus on Instagram and find out. But yeah, I'm sure there's probably similar groups out in America as well, so you can kind of connect into.
And
so,
just,
we've got American members as well, so
cool.
They're free to join us, yeah.
I just wanted to, just because we're running out of time, but chat about your podcast, because it seems like you kind of spent a lot of time not running, and then suddenly running becomes this huge thing, and you've now done like 100 episodes of A Runner's Life. So how did the podcast start?
I think it's just like the runner mindset, isn't it? You think, I'm going to start something, and then to commit to it for several years and see what happens. So for me, it was just more the fact of what I said, I'm going to start a podcast because I like, you know, having conversations. There's a way to connect with people and a way to learn from people as well. And I thought, okay, if I give myself a time scale, then I'll commit to it every week. And it's kind of snowballed on. So I never really started thinking, I'm going to get to 100 and whatever. It's just more like, let's do it for a year and see how it goes. I think at the beginning I tried to do too much, and then I scaled back a little bit more. But yeah, the conversations have been amazing, and you learn a lot about yourself, and you learn about your filler words and the things that you use between when asking questions, which is really annoying when you're listening back to yourself.
I hate listening back. I never do.
I hope he's not taking notes on half of the words.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, well, I would describe your podcast as having quite a broad mixture. It's kind of got elite runners, but it's got some just what we'd look at as ordinary runners. It's got runners with a story. Is that how you set about with the podcast, just getting that mix?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, I don't want to sort of, you know, be too simple about it, but the idea was to talk about a runner's life.
Yeah.
So my Instagram page, I talk about what my feelings of a runner's life means to me. And I wanted to speak to a wide range of people. So just to sort of show listeners that, like, regardless if you're elite or you're not elite, the reasons why we actually run are fairly similar, because it makes us feel good, it makes us feel connected, it makes us feel grounded, and it has such a big impact on our lives when you take out time to think of that. Obviously, I can bear in mind that there's people that are running competitively, so it's a different thing. You know, there is the fun, but then there's a serious aspect that they have to hit certain times to do certain things to get sponsorship money and whatnot. So it's not, you know, just kind of like sort of circle of love where we're all holding hands and we're all running with the sunset. But I try to sort of show like a different side of running, that I just want people to feel like it's a space for them and be connected in a wider way. And yeah, I just learned so many lessons from people. And a lot of the questions I do ask aren't really sort of focused on. Some of them are technical episodes. Like, for example, I've got like done like sub three, the championship ones. I've talked about nutrition, mindset, some things that I really want to know. But generally, they're just about running and life and how those two kind of things intersect together and how we take lessons from both. And you just, sometimes you sort of come into it thinking, oh, I see things from a certain way, and then you speak to someone else and they show you something completely different, you know, and you think, oh, I didn't think of it that way. So for me, it's an amazing learning experience, and I just, yeah, just love the conversations I have with people. You always learn something from everyone you speak to.
And kind of teenage you, would you have ever looked in the future and seen that you were doing a podcast about running and having it as such a central part of your life? Was it ever anything, a goal then?
I think you put the podcast to one side. I think also doing the podcast as well, the same as running, is doing something that scared me. So although people might say, oh, you speak quite confidently and you come across like this, I had this thing of just like sound my voice and speaking in public and all that. So I was like, this is ridiculous. So it's just about also doing something that scared me. And then the more you do it, you actually realize, actually, okay, my voice sounds like that. No, it's fine. Just get over it. Or you do like a podcast episode. I did a podcast episode with someone and I was so nervous. And I remember fluffing something and they gave me a critique at the end. And although you feel like, oh my gosh, like whatever, and you're just like, no one died.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, just do the next one. So like, I don't feel like whatever, but I just feel like everyone I speak to, I just think they're just a person. They've got up, they maybe had some challenges today, something's happened. You're just speaking to a person, and I just try to think of it in that way and just having a good conversation. But so it's helped me a lot, really, just to kind of get over my own fear, get out of my own way, and lots of things like that in life. I think it's so cool just to do things that, up to a point, just scale, not recklessly, because obviously you've got to go to work, do you know what I mean? But you've got to do some things that kind of push your boundaries, I mean.
Yeah, brilliant. Definitely. Talking about kind of, that kind of interact with, what about, does your family, I mean obviously your kids, one of them's only 17 months, so, but does your three-year-old, do they kind of join in when they're running? Does your wife run as well? Are you kind of, is it like a running family, or is it actually this is just daddy's hobby, kind of, in inverted commas?
Yeah, so my wife is probably more of like a team sports person and I'm more of like a lone wolf, I can do team sport, but I prefer my space. So, like, for me, running and that kind of thing is perfect. So,
yeah.
She supports me in that. The kids are quite young. And for me, I'd never want to be like trying to force them to be like a mini version of me, because they're not, they're their own people. I'm just like, just helping them find their way for what they want to do in their life.
Mm.
If they want to run, they run. You know, when I go out to the park with my daughter and she runs, you know, that's fun. And she, you know, I try to make it fun as possible. I remember probably like a couple of months ago, my daughter said to me, oh, Daddy, why do you run? And like, if you asked me why I run, I'd give you some sort of like answer that maybe potentially trying to impress you or an ego-filled answer or whatever, and trying to be really smart with it. But when they're like a three-year-old, you can't be like, well, I'm trying to get to London Championship place because when I started like, this time, like, no one cares. So he's like, look, I enjoy running. It really makes me feel good. And just break it down to that kind of level. And so I think that's a really cool question to ask me as well then, because I think sometimes you need that frame of reference sometimes to kind of think, oh, am I doing it for the reasons that best put me forward and best serve me?
Yeah, and also, I mean, yeah, marathon training and running can be incredibly selfish, can't it? And then can have impact upon the family. And there are times when, you know, when my kids are at Stonewell's and I'm training, I do feel guilty at times But thankfully, mine are now teenagers and kind
just
of just
go on their phones and don't notice that you're now.
Yeah, and almost just accept that's what dad does. Dad just runs. Yeah. But it is, isn't it? It's difficult, and it is great when they're that bit younger and they, yeah, you can't say, you know, well, because I want to get his qualifying time back. It doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah.
But sorry, that's the dog, not me. But they are wonderfully grounding us as well, aren't they? In kind of helping us with our kind of true motivation at times and kind of keeping our feet on the ground and not allowing us to get too completely carried away of our running aspirations and crazy dreams.
Absolutely. Like when you hear it back to yourself, like my first answer would be like, oh, it's a championship time. But sometimes you actually hear like how ridiculous that sounds. But you're basically telling your kids like, oh, the goal is more important than the running. So that was a good, sometimes like it's really good to have those sort of questions and the answers back at you.
Yeah.
Kind of make you really challenge actually why is it important. Not saying that the championship place is not important, but it can't be your first answer.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Excellent, fantastic. Oh, well, it's been superb catching up with you. So keep an eye out for you getting championships. So all set for October. Is it all going in the right direction, all injury free at the moment, training kind of on the button at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's going well. I mean, I think running is a challenging one. You aim for something. I'm doing my best to get there. But I think ultimately the long runs closer to the time will dictate where I am. So I'm going to do my best to get there. But if I'm not quite there or I am there, great. If I'm not quite there, then great. Then I'll just do my best in the marathon. So, you know, something I've learned with running is you've got to have a lot of patience. Sometimes you don't get to where you want in the time you want. It took me four times to break sub three, so I've got a lot of patience.
At least, yeah, you've still got a few more weeks. You've got about 15 weeks, so you're not quite on that final 12-week build-up. No. You just have to park your half marathon. That isn't an indicator of current fitness at all, is it, really?
Well, on one hand, it is, because like if you think, like for me, like if I the day I felt like a 3 out of 10, and to run the time that I ran as a 3 out of 10, I was like, actually, that's actually not bad.
Oh, right. So it wasn't a complete car crash.
If you reframe it like that, I mean, like, so, like, the time that I ran, a lot of people would say, yeah, that's amazing, and so I mean, I think it's cool, but I never want to come across as big-headed, but the times that you're running and training and stuff that you know you're capable of, it's kind of, you kind of know what you, where you should be. It's a hard one to have that conversation on social media without coming across like a complete idiot. It's almost like someone saying to someone like, oh yeah, should be grateful. Remember, now you can walk now. Like you, when you were like a baby, you couldn't walk. It's like, well, I'm not there. I'm here now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can walk, I can run, I can do stuff. I can drive cars. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Brilliant. Excellent. Fantastic. So yeah, I think, have you got any questions? So so if somebody is lining up for London, and they've got a summer of training ahead.
Yeah.
We've kept you for an hour already, so we'll try and start wrapping up. But what one tip? So somebody's kind of say, I don't want to kind of spoil all your tips from your talk you're giving on at the weekend. maybe that's what we should say, is like, if people want some top marathon tips, they should kind of join in on the London Marathon webinar at the weekend, because I was going to ask you if you could share maybe one tip that you would give somebody who's training for London or for their first marathon this year. What bit of one piece of advice would you give them?
So this is a question I ask people on my podcast, like, what's the one thing that you did to get to a certain time?
Throwing it at you this time.
It's not a fair question to ask, because there isn't really one thing. There isn't like one secret. There's no one workout. There's no like one piece of advice to give. Like, oh, now I've passed this on to you, that I could go forward and do stuff. It's all the little things that like that all matter, that all add up, like just the consistency. Like life has happened, so sometimes you know, you might not get the right sleep, but you try to do the best you can, try to eat, you know, the right things. You know, when you're training, I, you know, make sure I practice my tempo runs, practice my fueling, so it's not like a new thing. Like you see people doing faster runnings, like, you know, don't do that. Because you're trying to get your body used to kind of, if your body gets used to that, it's going to have a different reaction when you go to a race day and then you try to start giving it carbs. It's going to be like, what's happening here? And you're just going to blow up.
Yeah.
Also, same as like, you know, kit. Like when I do my long runs, I tend to wear what I'm probably going to wear on the race day.
Yeah.
So I just wear different versions of that so you feel comfortable in that. It's just like just the things that you do during the week, just making sure that you're giving the best that you can and just kind of just trying to be consistent with that and just being kind to yourself as well. Not being like a Spartan and be like, I must just eat rice, braised chicken and an avocado, some peas, and that's it. Do you know what I mean? I must not like touch like a drop of alcohol, but you know, you just do all things in kind of moderation, have fun with it, enjoy it, but just make sure you just do the consistent things on a, you know, just a consistent basis, and you'll get there. And just to know that, like, once you get the start line, as much as you think you can plan for all the things that could happen, you know, there was always going to be something that going to surprise you, do you know what I mean? And just be aware that when that happens, just to not freak out, just to be like, okay, cool, just take a breath and just be like, okay, cool, what's the best next step? Sometimes it might be like, oh, I've got to slow down, you know, and just, you know, and kind of go forward. Like when I did my sub-3, and I'm giving a very long answer here,
it's brilliant.
I think I was about 13-14 miles into it, and I started to feel quite sick. Like I thought, okay, what I can either do now is I can stop taking my gels and I'm going to blow up at mile 20, or I can start taking my gels, keep taking my gels, but sipping them just a lot slower.
Yeah.
And both seem like awful options, but you know what I mean? Like, but I still had to make that decision at that time. Whereas when I look at my training runs before, I was doing 80 miles plus easy, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Felt no problems. And, you know, things will happen in a marathon that you will test you, and it doesn't mean that you're, you know, weak or a failure. And then I just make the best next step, just process what's happening, and be like, okay, cool, what's next? So for me, the nutrition thing was a key example of like what happened in that race, even though I did all these things, quote unquote, right beforehand.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. We got about 5 tips there.
Yes. Superb.
So if we want to follow your next few months of training, where's the best place to have a look at what you're up to? Is that going to be on Instagram?
Yeah, I tried to share stuff on Instagram and on the podcast as well. So I'm not really that active in Strava. I'm probably going to offend a lot of people by saying this. The only person that follows me in Strava is my coach. So I feel like, especially being on social media, and like, I think sometimes you shouldn't share everything, to be honest. I think you've got to keep some things kind of private to a certain extent. Not that I'm trying to hide the training, because, you know, the race result tells you what you need to know.
Yeah.
So you can't deny that. But for me, it's just about kind of keeping that one side of things private. And I tend to then share like my weekly runs anyways on Instagram, and I tend to talk about the workouts that I'm doing, like a rationale. So even though I don't share the exact locations, I still share like what I'm doing. So people who might want to follow or learn from what I'm doing and want to share information and help me, you know, can sort of get involved as well. I don't have all the answers, so if there's any stuff that people want to share with them, yeah, feel free to share.
And what's your handle on Instagram?
Marathon Marcus. So unfortunately, Marathon Marcus was taken by about several people, which is why I had to add Marathon Marcus.
It's not your answer, is it?
It's not. No, I didn't. I took all the Marathon Marcus. I took them all. I took the Running Marcus, Ultra Marcus, every single thing, but I just have my own name on my Instagram handle. But yeah, so we'll put links down below.
And your podcast is A Runner's Life as well.
Thank you.
So if people want to kind of, if they've not come across your podcast, then go and have a look at it, go and have a listen to it. It's fantastic. Another one to take on runs, or just to have kind of when you're driving around and however you listen to your podcast. Kind of, this has been so motivational tonight talking to you as well. And your Instagram is, I find it so motivational as well, looking, going through it and reading stuff on there. So thank you so much for
taking the time out
this evening. Brilliant. It's been wonderful chatting to you. And we kind of keep our fingers crossed, if we can, for London for you. And exciting to see if you get that championship time.
Yeah, I've taken all everyone's sort of best wishes, so I'll take on all that energy. So
we're sending it out. We're going to be cheering you on.
Brilliant. And maybe in a few years' time, we'll see you out on some trails in the Ultra. fraternity.
Yeah, I'll
as
see
well.
You on a beach in Peru.
Or in the desert at MBS.
Hello.
And the Sahara. Brilliant, Marcus. It's been an absolutely pleasure chatting to you this evening. Take it easy and have a good rest of the week.
We'll
catch you soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, fantastic. What a brilliant interview there with Marcus. And so really kind of encouraging about the marathon as well. Excellent. I've said excellent now. We're probably going to have to go back and listen to some of the words and phrases we maybe overuse, like Marcus was saying he does that. So thank you those who are joining us. Thank you, Antonia and Chris. Glad you enjoyed it. And Gerson as well. Sorry we didn't get everybody's comment in there. It was just a very kind of engaging conversation there with Marcus. And we hope you all enjoyed it. And if you have listened to us on the podcast, please leave a review down the bottom. And if you've enjoyed it on YouTube, give us a thumbs up and click subscribe so you can keep up to date what's happening. And we are back in 2 weeks' time.
We are back in 2 weeks. And that really is going to be our last interview for Wild Ginger.
Oh, my goodness me. There we go.
We said it before and then we came back. But that really is last
time. Yeah, we did have a second comeback. But yeah, so it'll be our last time. So please do join us in 2 weeks' time for our last interview with a signed beagle. hopefully you won't be smelling a fox poo. But we hope you've enjoyed this evening. Have a good rest of the week. Stay safe. Enjoy the summer trails. And we shall see you in 2 weeks' time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, it's Claire here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These live chats take place every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. UK time on Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. And the link is in the show notes. I just wanted to let you know that you can find this and loads more advice and inspiration and gear tests all about trail and ultra running on my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running. There are training tips, advice from elite athletes, top coaches, nutritious recipes, key exercises, injury prevention information, and tons of trail kit reviewed, from running packs to poles, waterproofs to head torches, GPS watches, and shoes. And did I mention shoes? I've been going for a few years now, so there's a huge archive of content to help you out with your trail and ultra running. To quickly and easily find the information you need, simply type your query into the Google search box and then write Wild Ginger Running after it. Then Google will show you whatever blog posts or films I have on that topic. Give it a try. And if you appreciate listening and all the information I share on YouTube, you're also very welcome to support me on Patreon, which gets you some additional excellent perks and the chance to win some awesome prizes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee every month, patrons get discounts, extra films, access to the exclusive Facebook and Strava groups, the chance to ask questions to every live chat guest, plus automatic entry into my monthly competition to win £400 worth of trail and ultra running gear. There are only about 150 patrons, so the odds on a win are way better than the lottery. Interested? Find me at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Thanks for listening, guys. Have fun, enjoy your run, and I'll see you on the trails.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin,
while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.